You're on. You're on. You're on.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. Once a year, I get to really dress up and wear what my wife got me a few years ago for Passover, the ugliest tie in the history of the world, my matzah tie. It's good because when I eat the matzah at the Seder and the crumbs fall on it, you can't tell because it's falling on matzah. And so after the show tonight, we're having our family Seder, my children, my grandson, by Skype, my granddaughter, and we'll be singing the traditional songs and telling the traditional jokes. There are some Seder jokes. I won't bore you with them. It's enough I sang yesterday. I'm not going to try to be a comedian today. So there's that. And the other thing I wanted to mention, that in tomorrow's Wall Street Journal, you can get it online now, I have an op-ed very critical of President Biden for his moral equivalent statement that I talked about yesterday, where he basically said, I condemn anti-Semitism, but I also condemn people who don't understand where the Palestinians are at. Well, no, I understand where the Palestinians are at. They're victims of Hamas. And many of the Palestinians deserve precisely what they're getting. They supported the terrorism. They 70 or 80%, depending on where, supported October 7th. Many of them supported it materially, financially, logistically. There's the famous tape of a guy who had just murdered 10 Jews, children, women, and he calls his mother and father, oh, daddy and mommy, you should be so proud. I just killed 10 Jews with my bare hands. And the father and the mother and Gaza are saying, oh, we're so proud of you. That's so wonderful. Wish we could be there with you to watch you kill all these Jews. Are we really going to create a moral equivalence between what's happening to those people, which is largely the fault of Hamas, and Hamas supporters who murder people in cold blood? No, we're not going to create that moral equivalence, even if President Biden tells us to. Remember, President Biden said he was running for president because of what Donald Trump said in Charlottesville. I know I quoted in my op-ed in today's Wall Street Journal, which I did jointly with Andrew Stein. And you know, he condemned Trump for creating a moral equivalence between people who said that they wanted to take down statues of Robert E. Lee and people who didn't want to take down statues of Robert E. Lee. That was a reasonable debate. He said there were very good people, very fine people on both sides of that. And he was condemned for that. And, you know, he could have been clearer. It was ambiguous. Some people thought he meant that there were very fine people on the side of those who were screaming, Jews will not replace us. Trump says he didn't mean that. He could have been clearer. But Biden could have been a lot clearer, too, when he said yesterday, I condemn anti-Semitism, but I also condemn those who don't understand where Palestinians are at. No, that's not a decent comparison at a time when the only students who are being harassed on college campuses today are Jewish and Zionist students who are being attacked and harassed and physically sometimes pummeled by people who are saying, we are Hamas. We will bring you October 7th, not 100 times, not 1,000 times, but 10,000 times. That means how many rapes? If 25 or 30 people or 50 people were raped on October 7th, does that mean 1,000 times or 10,000 times that is desirable? Imagine a college campus tolerating a student who said, I believe in rape, or a student from the Ku Klux Klan or a white supremacist group who said, I celebrate the fact that people rape black women. That's what they deserve. Imagine anybody ever saying that on a campus. They never would have. It's a double standard. And clearly, President Biden has contributed to that double standard. Today, the State Department also issued a human rights statement in which they seemed to compare what Israel has done in Gaza to what Hamas did on October 7th. There's no comparison. Israel is defending itself. It's warning people. It's trying desperately to avoid civilian casualties. What Hamas did on October 7th is every Jew they saw, they killed if they could, and raped if they could, and beheaded if they could. Those kinds of comparisons shouldn't be made by the State Department. And then you have the Secretary of State saying, well, we don't apply a double standard to Jews. And then you have one of his deputies saying, well, of course we apply a double standard to Israel. Of course we do. We expect more of Israel than we do of other countries. So we do apply a double standard. Well, which one is it? Of course they apply a double standard. And so we'll continue to observe and watch what's going on college campuses today, which is only a symbol and a symptom of a much deeper iceberg. What we're seeing is college campuses today have become, in many places, propaganda mills for radicalism. The teachers now, many of them were the radicals from the 1970s who were protesting the Vietnam War. I know I defended some of them. Some of them were pretty horrible people. I defended their First Amendment rights. And then they became tenured professors. There was one woman who was convicted of murdering police. And then she became a professor at Columbia, or people from the Weather Underground who became professors. What do you expect the students to think if they're being propagandized by these radical, hard left, anti-American professors? So the problem at universities is a lot deeper. And the villain is this DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, intersectionality, you know, critical race theory, all of which divides the world into alleged oppressors and oppressed. And of course, Jews and whites and Christians are all the oppressors and the others are all the oppressed. So don't treat them equally. A free speech for me, but not for thee. So we'll stay on that and we'll make sure to focus on what's going on these college campuses, because as I said, it's a symptom of a much, much larger problem. So let's turn to the issue of the day. Today was the first pretty much full day of trial for Donald Trump. There's only one problem with a trial. No reasonable person can figure out what the crime is. For example, today, the witness was this guy Pecker from the National Enquirer, this kind of rag that does catch and kill. You know, he makes money by getting rich people to pay him to buy stories from people who are going to be exposing famous people. And then he buys the story and gets an exclusive with the accuser and then doesn't run the story. A pretty sleazy journalism, not a crime. Why do we have a whole day of testimony on something that may be immoral but isn't a crime? And in the next days, we're going to hear from Stormy Daniels, who'll say, I got paid hush money, even though she denied it earlier, because I had sex with Donald Trump, even though she denied that earlier. But it's not a crime. If you want to make it a crime to do catch and kill, make it a crime. Then people will either commit the crime or they won't do it. If you want hush money to be a crime, make it a crime. Pass a law doing that. If you want covering up hush money to be a crime, draft a statute, have it passed by the state legislature. But they didn't do that. Instead, they just made up a crime. They took a minor state misdemeanor well past the statute of limitations, which makes it a minor misdemeanor, a little slap on the wrist. If you list something in a corporate expense form as a legal expense, but it really was more of a political expense. People do that all the time. List things as legal if it was done to avoid a lawsuit or to avoid exposure. And that was a minor misdemeanor long expired under the statute of limitations. And so they created this felony out of that by saying, but his real purpose was to fool the voters and to create election fraud, a federal offense. And so he committed a state misdemeanor in order to commit a federal crime. The problem is the federal government didn't prosecute, and the Federal Election Commission didn't think it was a violation of election laws. So you get a state, actually just a borough district attorney, a local borough district attorney, turning a local misdemeanor into a felony, which you can get years in prison for, by invoking federal law when the federal government didn't think there was a violation of federal law. It's just not a crime. It's not a crime. And I can understand why Donald Trump is furious. Nobody would ever be prosecuted for that jerry-rigged combination of misdemeanors and federal felonies to create a state felony if his name wasn't Donald Trump and he weren't running for president of the United States. Of course, that's the only reason that he is being prosecuted. Let nobody ever doubt that. That's the only reason he's being prosecuted. If he weren't running for president, he'd never be prosecuted. No one in history has ever been prosecuted for this crime or anything like it. It's a made-up case, a made-up crime. And we shouldn't tolerate that in America. As I said before, if you listen to CNN, this is the worst crime since the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. If Abraham Lincoln's assassination by Booth had been on videotape, the evidence is overwhelming. And these highly credible witnesses who suddenly, you know, saw God and decided that they're going to tell the truth after lying repeatedly and making contradictory and contrary statements. This is the strongest case ever, according to CNN, MSNBC, and the New York Times. But not according to honest lawyers who know this is no case here at all. There's no case at all. There's no crime. I've been doing this 60 years. I've defended many, many, many hundreds of criminals. I have written hundreds of articles. I have written books about the subject. I've taught 10,000 students criminal law. There is no crime. There's just no crime. There's a trial, but there is no crime. There can be a conviction. There might be a punishment and a sentence, but there is no crime. And I think the appellate courts should ultimately rule that way, but it'll be after the election. And so the purposes of the prosecution will have been served, which are multifold. Number one, get a felony conviction. There are going to be some voters who will be influenced foolishly by a false felony conviction against Donald Trump. Number one. Number two, gag him. Number three, lock him in the courthouse, make him stay here and not campaign. Those are the goals, and they are being achieved. And maybe the conviction will be achieved as well. This is, after all, a jury which is gotten out of a jury pool, which was, what, 85% of people who will do anything to stop Trump from being president again. So that's the first issue in the case. There is no crime. There might be a conviction, but there is no crime. The second is this gag order. Has nobody read the First Amendment? Has nobody read the Pentagon Papers case? Not a single commentator on CNN, as far as I can tell, has mentioned the term prior restraint. The First Amendment prohibits prior restraint. It doesn't allow you to enjoin people from saying things, with extraordinary exceptions. Even the Pentagon Papers, where the government came in and said, our government will fail, we'll lose the war in Vietnam, people will die, soldiers will die. The Supreme Court said, no, not good enough, no prior restraint. So what this judge has done is impose prior restraint on the most frivolous, silly claims that he's going to intimidate Cohen, the witness. Cohen is all over television, he has his own podcast in which he excoriates Trump every day, calls him the most horrible names. He's not going to be deterred, but the gag order prevents Trump from responding to Cohen and answering him and closes down the marketplace of ideas. The same thing is true of the other witnesses in the case of Stormy Daniels and others. He has the right to condemn them and to criticize them in the court of public opinion. And the court has no power under the First Amendment to engage in prior restraint on that. He can order prior restraint in efforts to expressly intimidate the jury. If a defendant were to say, any juror who votes to convict me, I will put out a contract on his life, or I will, you know, do something else terrible to him, or I will sue him. Okay, that I understand that. witness intimidation, but you don't need a gag order for that. That's already a crime. Intimidating a witness is a crime. Intimidating a juror is a crime. You don't need prior restraint. Prior restraint is designed to go beyond what's currently a crime and prevent First Amendment protected statements from being made. It's prior restraint on First Amendment rights. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump's rights. I'm talking about your rights, my rights. I want to hear Donald Trump. I don't know who I'm going to vote for in the next election, but I want to hear Donald Trump. I want to hear what he has to say about these witnesses. I can't see it in court because they won't let me, because New York has refused to allow this trial to be televised. I don't blame them. They are probably so embarrassed and ashamed about bringing this case to trial that they don't want anybody to see it on television. That's an additional reason for allowing Trump to speak outside of the courthouse about the witnesses, because you can't see him talk in the courthouse about witnesses. And so it's so clearly unconstitutional, the prior restraint of just talking about witnesses, not intimidating them. Intimidating them is already covered by law. We're talking about constitutionally protected speech. That's all we're talking about. Because if it's not constitutionally protected speech, it would be covered by the criminal statute. This is prior restraint of constitutionally protected speech. And it's unconstitutional, but not according to CNN. They regard the argument as silly. The First Amendment is silly. They regard the First Amendment as irrelevant to this, that the courts have upheld gag orders. Yeah, very narrowly drawn gag orders. Not this one. Not this one. And then finally, there is the decision by the prosecutor not to allow Trump to go to various events that he'd like to go to and waive his right to be at trial, whether it be his son's graduation or the Supreme Court argument tomorrow, Thursday, about whether he has immunity. There is a statute in it. Virtually every other court allows a defendant to come and go. You can be at the court. You don't have to be at the court. You can waive your right. It's only a defendant's right. You can't have a trial in absentia. That is, you can't deny a defendant the right to be at his trial. But I don't think you can deny a defendant the right not to be at his trial. And the New York statute says a judge has the discretion to allow a defendant not to be at the trial, but only if the prosecution consents. That's unconstitutional. In an adversary system of justice, you can't give exclusive power to one side to decide whether or not the defendant has to be in the courtroom. So we have a combination of three elements: an unconstitutional statute requiring him to be in the courthouse, an unconstitutional gag order statute, and crimes that aren't crimes at all, which of course is unconstitutional. What can be more unconstitutional than putting a person on trial for something that isn't a crime? There is also what's known in the criminal law's fair warning. Fair warning requires that you look at the statute books and you know what is criminal and what is not. You can't be surprised. It has to be fair warning. Can anybody ever imagine anybody looking at the statute books of New York and saying, well, wait a minute, if it's a misdemeanor and it's barred by the statute of limitations, but it's designed to violate a federal law, which the federal government doesn't think was violated, then, it's a crime. No, you can't do that. It has to be clear. There has to be notice to the defendant. The defendant has to be able to have that Hamlet moment to be or not to be a criminal, a felon, to step over that line. You can't do that when there's a statute scheme, a statutory scheme like this. And so on balance, I have to tell you, I've never seen a greater combination of constitutional violations in one case than in this New York Manhattan case against Donald Trump. But you won't hear that on CNN. You don't hear a single commentator making these points. You can only hear these points made on my podcast, in my articles, or when I or some other people appear on Fox or on Newsmax. But you never hear it from MSNBC. You never hear it from CNN, and you never read it in the New York Times. And worst of all, you can't decide for yourself because you're not going to be able to see it on television. That is the biggest scandal of all, not being able to see this trial on television. I still haven't heard a good justification for that. What's the justification? The public's right is at stake. It's not the defendant's right. It's not the prosecution's right. It's not the judge's right. It's the right of the people of the United States to see how the justice system works. Congress is on television. The Senate is on television. The White House, when the president chooses, is on television. The Supreme Court, even the Supreme Court, which is so allergic to television, Chief Justice Rehnquist said he would rather die, I think, than allow television in the Supreme Court. Even they now allow audio in the courthouse to listen live in real time to important arguments like the arguments on abortion. How can anything be more important than putting a former president and a potential future president on trial for a non-crime with an unconstitutional gag order and an unconstitutional rule requiring him to be in court every day? We have the right to see that, to make our own judgment. We should not be making our judgments through the prism of false reporting by CNN, by MSNBC, and by the New York Times. So this is a very, very sad day for democracy. And I hope that people understand that, that how we, the public, are being deprived of our right to see the trial, our right to hear Donald Trump, our right to decide who to vote for. Elections should be based on what the candidates say. But Trump can't say what he'd like to say. He can say a lot, but he can't say things that are very important because we're not going to be able to see the cross-examination of the witnesses in real time or at all. They're not even allowing videotapes, which can be shown after the trial. What conceivable reason could there be for that, that you can't take a videotape and then show it after the trial? I understand why New York doesn't want it to be seen. If I were conducting a trial like this, I wouldn't want anybody to see it either. It is such a scandalous abuse of the Constitution. But the public has the right to see the trial. And it's a terrible mistake to keep the public from seeing that trial. And it's a terrible mistake to prevent Donald Trump from talking about witnesses. And it's a terrible mistake to keep Donald Trump from campaigning if he chooses to. It's his right. It's his life. It's his future. And it's your right to hear him and your right to see him. And so from a constitutional law point of view, flunking grade for New York, for Manhattan, for the prosecution, for the judge, flunking grades all around, and the losers are the American public. Okay, so let's see what the letters are today. We've got some interesting letters today. Professor, if you were currently teaching at Columbia, what would you do? I was offered a job at Columbia to teach at the law school. I would not be offered a job today to teach at Columbia Law School because I'm not radical enough to be acceptable at Columbia Law School. But if I were teaching at Columbia Law School, I'd be one of the very, very few, one of two, I think, professors who would stand up for the pro-Israel students, for the Jewish students, for the Zionist students. I would stand up for full and complete free speech, not for selective free speech. I would be out there with the students who are being harassed and who are being threatened and are being attacked, and I would have their back. And I urge Columbia professors who agree with me to do the same thing. I would do the same thing at Harvard. At Harvard, as far as I know, not a single professor, not one, is standing up for the Jewish students. At Columbia, there was one, and he got banned from the campus. So much for full free speech. Free speech for me, but not for thee, is not consistent with the First Amendment. Okay, next question. Alan says he doesn't know what crime Donald Trump committed. It is obvious he's guilty of trying to run for president. As for the students who don't seem to like Jewish folks, they should be expelled, and if from another country, deported. It's interesting. I don't believe in expelling or deporting students who exercise their First Amendment rights. I believe in exposing them. I believe in knowing their names. Today, there were television showed hundreds of faculty members, some of whom supported Hamas. I want to know their names. We have a right to know their names. They're being funded by the government. Columbia University couldn't continue to operate without government funding, even though it's a private university. And I want to know the names of those professors who my taxes are paying for, who are supporting Hamas. You know, they may have a First Amendment right, just like Nazis have a First Amendment right to march in Skokie, but I have a right to know who the Nazis are, and I have a right to know who the Nazi-like professors are. I'm not talking about those who may say, well, we maybe disagree with the students, but we defend their right of free speech. I'm talking about the ones who are there supporting the substance of what they're doing, the ones who would never march if there were pro-Israel students who were being disciplined or expelled. These are not free speech advocates or academic freedom advocates. These are radical professors who only support the free speech of those with whom they agree. And I challenge anyone to dispute me on that one. Show me a professor who would actually march equally with the Jewish students as they would for Hamas students. Okay. Professor, if former President Trump is found guilty, could Judge Marchon immediately send Trump to prison pending sentencing? He could. It would be reversed on appeal. The appellate division would immediately free him, I think, but he could do it. Am I correct to assume the U.S. Supreme Court could not hear an appeal of this pre-sentence imprisonment until after New York appellate division and the New York Court of Appeals ruled on the issue? Generally, that's true. Could the New York courts keep Trump in prison past Election Day before the Supreme Court could rule on the detention? Theoretically, they could. It's not going to happen. I don't believe Donald Trump will be sent to prison for this alleged crime, not a crime at all. Remember that there was a presidential candidate, Socialist Party candidate in 1920, who ran for president from prison. And he got, I think, 1 million votes when he ran for president. I think he got 2 million votes the time before. So he was not just a marginal candidate. Far, far worse. The far left have proven beyond doubt they are the new Nazis. I have seen and heard pro-Hamas people call Jews Nazis. How insane is that? I'm not Jewish, but this is exactly what happened before and during World War II. Look, I do believe that people who support Hamas are no different from people who support Nazis. That Hamas are the new Nazis of today. If they had the power to murder every Jew in the world, they would. If they had the power to build gas chambers, they would. What's my proof, by the way? Hamas was founded essentially through Muslim extremists like the Muslim Brotherhood. The founder of that was a man named Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who actually went to Berlin and worked with Hitler during the Second World War in an effort to build death camps in Israel. They had plans to build a death camp, I think in Hebron or Jenin, one of the cities on in Judea and Samaria on the West Bank, that they wanted to kill Jews. And the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem was in favor of it. He is the one who thought of it. He's the one who put the idea into Hitler's head. Of course, Hitler was pretty receptive to that idea. Kill a Jew anywhere and Hitler will be on your side. But the origin of the radical Islamic anti-Semitic movement is Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and Hitler together. So it's no stretch to call supporters of Hamas Nazis. They are Nazis. They collaborated with Nazis. They work with Nazis. They today have a program that is Nazi-like. The charter of Hamas is a Nazi charter. And so, yeah, anybody who supports Hamas is supporting Nazis. Interesting, people complain because I defended the rights of Nazis to march through Skokie. I hated the Nazis. I wish they were hit by a bus and, you know, on the way to the march, but I defended the right of free speech. But these folks are actually defending Hamas and supporting Hamas and saying, we are Hamas. Okay, so here's the nasty one. Everything you said about Colombia and how they are anti-Jew are democratic ideas, yet you are part of the Democratic Party. I'm not part of the Democratic Party. I don't have a card that says Democratic Party. I sometimes vote for Democrats, mostly over time. I have voted for Republicans for governor, and I could easily be open to vote for Republicans in the future, depending on who the candidates are. But I am not of the Democratic Party. All of the demonstrations going on are allegedly led by Democrats. No, many of them are led by anti-Democrats, radical revolutionaries who call President Biden Genocide Joe. So no, this is not just between Democrats and Republicans. I think it's a terrible thing that President Biden basically embraced AOC the other day and said, I learned to listen to that woman. That woman is a virulent racist, bigot, anti-Semite, anti-Israel. She accuses Israel of genocide. She would like to see Israel wiped off the face of the earth. She doesn't admit that, but that's where her arguments would lead. So I condemn Joe Biden for his failure to speak up and condemn AOC, the squad, and these other virulently anti-Israel people who are today the new Nazis marching on campus. If they got their way, America would not be safe for Jews. A happy Passover, happy week to everybody. See you tomorrow.